Hello and welcome to this week's Comic Roast. I am your host, Scott. You can find me on Twitter at xorsonx. I'm here with Brian. You can find on Pritter. on Twitter at Pure Rock Fury. We're here with Chris. You can find on Twitter at SkateXEdge. And we're here with Damien. You can find on Twitter at Damien Johnston. Our number one for the week is Turncoat on Boom Studios. Apparently it's going to be a short little four-issue series by Alex Pacnadel. Yeah, nailed it. And let's see, over under for the week is late 80s Headbangers Ball video. I hate that band. Hate that band, Hairbangers Ball, because it always throws me off. But Headbangers Ball, late 80s videos. Remember those things that used to exist that went away and then came back because of YouTube? Yeah.
Circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now?
First on the agenda, the usual what we've read the last week. I have been actually going through a lot of the single issues that I picked up at C2E2 that I will hopefully be having reviews up probably by the time this airs. So go to reviewandroast.com and check that out and look for those, because there's a lot of fun stuff I've been reading. So we'll definitely hopefully have that up soon. Other than that, caught up on Bombshells, and that's really about it. I mean, I was going through my stack and I'm like three behind on Descender. Like, I'm so disappointed in myself right now. I don't know if anyone's keeping up on it, but
oh yeah, I have.
Yeah, I'm a little, I didn't realize I was so far behind.
That's Descender, is that you said?
Yes, yeah. That was
I read the first trade and I liked it a lot, but I'm just kind of waiting for the second one, I think.
Yeah, we've been, well, actually, we did the number one on here many, many moons ago, and then I've just been doing the singles ever since, and I didn't realize I haven't read it in 3 months. Doesn't feel like it.
There was actually a really good thing online I read today about waiting for the trade, so to speak, and this guy gave this, like, point-by-point thesis as to why comics should start thinking more in terms of trades and arcs as opposed to single issues for numerous reasons. I'll leave it there.
Yeah. I like the single issues. If I've missed a lot of them, like if I come into something like, you know, I discover you guys turn me on to something at like issue 10 or 15, I'm not going to go back and try to buy back issues. So I'm just going to wait for trades. And then at that point, I usually, if I buy the trade, then I'm like, well, crap, now I got the trade. I'm just going to wait till the next one because I don't want to have a bunch of singles and trades. And
yep.
It's a OCD thing where I've got to have one or the other.
Yeah, that plus there are certain writers and certain books that I just want on a bookshelf.
Yeah.
Like Ed Brubaker being a perfect example. If like any writers I tend to favor, I just want that name on the spine. That's pretty much...
Yeah, well, there's that term. I don't know if it's a term really, but something I've been said to me and I've said before. But there's like certain things that belong in the library, you know, kind of the thing that you're like cool with packing up and moving every time you got to move. Like, there's those items that you just kind of really want to carry around forever with you. And you know, I think that's where the trades come in for me.
Ditto. Plus, like when they do the omnibus editions and you find one for way cheaper than it's marked.
Yeah.
It's kind of
like, but
I
think I mentioned this before, but someone was telling me, and I've never read the single issues of Bitch Planet, and I assume you guys have.
Yeah.
But I was told that the issues always have really awesome letters in the back, mm-hmm. that deal with, like, you know, women's issues and all these things that are really kind of educational and super interesting and give you new perspective, and you don't get that in the trade, which I guess is kind of a bummer. But...
Yeah, I totally skip over them, though.
Of course he does.
Yeah, the only problem with the singles is...
No, I don't.
That whole...
No, they do. They do. They usually have, like... It usually has, like, some professor or someone who's involved in, like, you know, feminist, you know, issues, so...
Yeah, that's awesome.
I like Bitch Planet, because she's actually using it for, like... As a, I guess as a soapbox, so to speak, you know.
Yeah, it's a conduit to, you know, communication with other people. It's great that they're using it for good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
well, maybe later they'll put out a collected letters version.
Brian was all about it, and then now he's not.
Oh, I love the letters. Are not? It's actually not really a letter section. It's more of a essay section. But
oh, essay section. Okay.
For me, as each issue went on, the essay section was way more interesting than the comic itself.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was going to say.
I've only read the first trade. That's the only perspective I have, and I liked it quite a bit. But I don't know where it's gone. You know, Southern Bastards is actually like that too. Don't they have recipes in the back of the issues?
I think they actually do.
Well, now I feel like I got ripped because I got the trade.
Yeah, I think Southern Bastards. I think what's the dude's name? Jason Aaron. I think he'll talk about like being from the South and what that means, and has little perspectives on that as well. And there'll be like recipes for fry bread and stuff like that.
I think you're right. I only own one single issue, and that's the one with the dog chewing up the Confederate flag, because I thought that cover was so excellent that I needed to have it. And
got to support that.
Well, there's also, I forget if it's the artist or the letterer, he's also from the South. He writes this ginormous essay about what it's like.
Jason
growing...
Aaron and Jason Latour are both from the South.
All right, I was... Anyway. But this guy... I can't remember if it's him or if it's somebody else, writes this long essay about being from the South and how he views the Confederate flag and what it really means and what we should do with it going forward. And it was super good. So I got my money's worth for those two reasons alone. I don't even think I read the comic because I started with the trades as well.
No, I've been reading it. That thing rules.
Yeah, I'm a fan.
It's a good comic.
It's a good comic. It's beautiful and sad as hell.
Yeah, and it's quite muffed up.
Mm-hmm. All I really read this week that I could claim to have finished was Volume 2 of the Punisher Max hardcover, Garth Ennis run. And it's another example of how, in a lot of ways, I've kind of grown disinterested in Garth Ennis. Which I know is weird because he's getting a lot of attention now, because I don't know if anyone's heard, but The Boys has been picked
up
by Cinemax.
By
Cinemax.
Yeah.
By Cinemax?
Yeah.
Yeah, Seth Rogen and that, not Adam McKay, but the other guy that he wrote Green Hornet with, the one that they're doing Preacher together, they're adapting The Boys for Cinemax, which I guess is kind of appropriate, but I just feel like Garth Ennis, like, he just loves excessive violence to the point where it just loses all of its, I don't know, poignancy. Is that even the right term?
So what you're telling me is you don't like the Punisher that he did.
It's okay.
I read Kitchen Irish. That's the only thing I think I've read by him. And
you're nuts, dude.
I liked it.
No, Kitchen Irish was pretty good.
I actually kind of hoped that was going to be the Punisher subplot of the Daredevil thing, because I thought that was a cool...
Actually, it is.
Yeah, I guess it is kind of weird. There's that one character is in the show for a few minutes.
Yeah, and the whole thing with him shooting up the bar and all that stuff, but I don't want to spoil too much, because Scott hasn't watched it yet.
That's right, yeah, you're right. They did pull some from that. I totally forgot.
Yeah, Volume 2 is Mother Russia, which I was, like, not into, and... Up is Down and Black is White, which was okay. Garth Ennis, he's so happy to, like, revel in bloodlust that no deaths...
Not true.
No deaths in his stories matter most of the time.
That's not true.
That's...
Dreaming Eagles is nowhere near anything like that.
That's one example.
Okay, well, you can't pigeonhole and... Maybe majority of his stuff. I mean, I would definitely say Crossed.
Crossed, this Punisher run.
Yeah, but his Punisher run, I feel, is everything that the Punisher is supposed to be.
Okay.
I mean, that's just my opinion. I mean, when someone says, yeah, I'm coming up with this character, and I'm calling in the Punisher.
Well, when he came out, he had white boots and a spandex outfit, so...
Well, I know that, but... That's besides the point.
I'm just saying, for me, I'm getting a little tired of Garth Ennis is all.
I don't read enough of his stuff, so... I don't read Cross, so I don't even bother with that. And I don't bother with what else is he doing? Dreaming Eagles is good. There's something else he's doing. I can't think of it right now. I'm surprised he didn't like it.
It's okay.
The Slavers is supposed to be really good.
I don't know what that is.
That's the next one after what you had just read.
Oh. It's okay.
Well, moving on, you might as well go into what you read, Chris.
Good, because I'm going to, now that Brian's just totally dogged the Punisher, I'm just going to ruin the fix for him right now.
Well, don't ruin it for me.
No, I'm kidding. I'm not even going to mention it.
I opened it this week. I'm but it looks really cool.
Yeah, I read it this morning. I read it last night, and then I read it again this morning. So I read that. It's cool. That's all I'll say. Other than that, I just caught up on, you know, my singles, my pile of singles, Descender, Harrow County. What else did I read? I got it back here.
Was that the same Harrow County? Is that like the still from the one that we did on the number one here like months ago?
Yeah. Yeah. It got better.
Okay. Yeah, I remember it being okay. I was kind of thinking maybe I'll just go the trade route, but obviously I'm poor and I have to pick and choose.
Yeah, no, it's good. I like it. It definitely got better from the first issue.
Okay. Good to know.
At least for me it did.
Yeah.
I like it. It's hold on a second. Yeah, I read Harrow County. What else did I get caught up on? Yeah, Descender. The Discipline. I read that one yesterday, number two.
No. How's that going? All right.
I don't know quite how to. It's out there. I like it.
All right. Maybe I'll take a peek.
Honestly, I don't even remember.
Brian's probably like, I don't even need to know any more about it to not look into it.
I don't even remember what the first one was about.
The bored housewife who was obsessed with that painting and the weird sex stuff, the demons.
Yeah, it was just more weird sex stuff.
No idea. I know we just did it.
Jogging through Central Park, talking to her dog.
Vaguely, yeah.
Yeah, this one was more like, you know, her almost, like, I don't, if Damien, are you going to get it?
No, probably not, honestly.
Number two, you sure you're not going to go get it?
Yeah, I'm not. Go ahead.
I ruined it for you, didn't I?
No.
Oh.
No, you didn't say anything.
Well, like, it kind of ruined itself on the first one.
Yeah, whatever.
This one just had more weird sex stuff of her almost raping her husband and her telling that guy, fuck me now.
That comic is made for you.
Yeah, that's to say the least, yeah.
I was reading it. I was like laughing. I thought it was hilarious. But,
wow.
No, but, I am going to have to talk about it because it was really good. But the fix is actually very good. It's a very, very good comic. It's big, and like I was telling Brian, it's just like Nick Spencer's other stuff. I anytime I read something by Nick Spencer, I feel like I'm reading a book because he's got – I don't know why, but for him, he's just got so much – script in his comics. Brian, you agree?
More or less.
I mean, yeah, because I read Ant-Man. That thing was a chock full of words. So it was, well, I mean,
how
as compared
you
to some other writers, he's got a lot.
Yeah.
And this one was no shortage of text. And it's just crass and it's dark humor, and it's like, here's I'll give you just one little snippet.
Please don't.
It's just one little thing, dude. It's not even going to ruin it. There's a part where this guy is robbing someone, and he's going to take his watch, and he goes, the guy's like on the ground. He's a jogger, obviously, and he's looking up at the guy, and he goes, just so you know, that only works for one person, and it's the Fitbit that he's stealing from the guy.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. So it's got a lot of humor in it. It's kind of like I compared it with two movies, and then I realized they were both by Quentin Tarantino. So it's like, oh, it's got that Pulp Fiction kind of feel to it, to me.
Okay.
But the humor in it, it's not over the top. It's not gross. It's not, you know, it's crass, and it's adult humor, but it's not like, you know, it's not disgusting. But it's very good. It was a really good issue. So much so I read it twice already.
The comic's so nice you gotta read it twice. Nailed it.
Oh my god. No, dude, it's really good. It's really good.
I'm not down. You said it's really good like 8 times just now. So I believe you. And this is the fix we're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay, I might have to pick that up.
You gotta get it.
Well, you know, I mean,
you'll like it.
Depends on the wallet, you know what I'm saying? I don't make all the decisions. What about you, Damien? You read anything good?
I've been really super poor this week. I read the number one. But by the time everyone hears this, Emerald City Comic Con will have ended. And I did go to... Last night I went to a party at Arcane Comics, like the kind of pre-party for Emerald City, and got to meet a lot of people that I wanted to, that I haven't had a chance to talk about their work with them, and a bunch of my other friends. My buddy Mark Palm gave me the preview edition for his second issue of his hyper-violent, really insane adventure comic called Punch to Kill.
What? We need
Punch to Kill.
We need to discuss this further.
It's pretty awesome. It's got this really beautiful like 1980s like naivete to it that I just love. I don't know. It's hilarious. I mean, it's super funny. It's very, very, very violent. There, at one point, like, this character kind of swings his arm in this magical way and ends up cutting someone in half, and the sound effect is dissect. Like, it's that kind of thing. Like, like someone's like running, and their sound effect is just rage. You know,
what book? We did a book like that.
God Hates Astronauts.
That's right. That was the only thing I really liked about that book.
That was the best thing about that book.
Yeah,
actually.
Okay.
And King Tiger eating a cheeseburger.
That was pretty good as well. But it had good elements. It just didn't pull it all together for me.
It was just. It was. I thought it was just out. It was so out there.
That's just it. I think for it being so out there, it didn't feel like it was that out there in a lot of ways. I think that's what
really,
kind of...
I just felt like it was so out there that nothing like congealed or like nothing really made sense. It looked like ideas were slapped together. But anyways, go ahead, Damien.
Oh, no, I was just saying that I got that. I ended up finally meeting and talking with Tom Neely and Keenan Keller from The Humans.
Oh, nice.
And, yeah, they're up here, and we realized we had a bunch of friends in common, and Tom Neely was like, "Oh, you did that record? I know who you are, of course." So we talked for a while, and they told me about the next arc of The Humans they're doing, which they probably don't want me to say on a podcast right now, but it sounds like there's another storyline of that coming out, and they're doing some other thing. They're doing a ton of shit for Image right now, it looks like. Yeah, but the party was awesome. Arcane Comics, actually, the comic shop, they are also being priced out of this neighborhood. They're having to move.
Jeez.
So they're moving like up north in Seattle to the Shoreline District, which is not great. but they actually started printing comics, too. And they just put out their first issue under Arcane Press that collects the first and second issues of this comic called Canter, by this guy Matthew Allison, and Cantor is gorgeous and super crazy. It's like really gross Mobius meets Jack Kirby comics, and I don't mean gross like in a blood or pussy sort of way, just weird. I don't know, maybe even like Lovecraftian in a way. Like there's just these creatures. It's really hard to explain, but maybe I'll send you guys a link to that stuff if I can find that. But yeah, so this week was pretty quiet until I went to the party last night, and then it was just fun to hang out with a bunch of cartoonists and watch them all get progressively wasted till like 1 a.m. So it's going to be really sad for Arcane to move, because it's just, it's had a sweet spot in the neighborhood for a really long time, and it's been nice that it's, you know, a block from my house. But
oh wow!
So when I get drunk at the comic shop, which is a weird thing to say, I can just wander home, and it's really been great.
Yeah, that's, I don't know. That's, it sounds like it's kind of happening in Chicago as well, but I don't go down to the city much for numerous reasons. One is the rats, which there are plenty of now. Actually, it's funny. I was driving home from, I was driving back to the office yesterday. I had to go run some errands, and they were talking about the rat problem in Chicago and how they're about to attempt to release feral cats into various neighborhoods to try and control the rats. Because they keep,
it's like that Simpsons episode.
Pretty much. I guess like they're digging up all these old buildings and replacing them with new condos, and as they're digging up all these old relics of old hospitals and old factories, rats are just going all over the place, and they're taking over people's yards and basements and cats to the rescue, I guess.
Well, when you let a city fall to shambles, this is the price you pay.
Yeah, it happens here, too. I see a lot more rats on the street in Seattle than I ever used to. It's weird. You know, you build up a city and you get all these new rich people moving in, and creates a new, I mean, every time the rent goes up $100, I don't know if it's the same everywhere, but every time the rent goes up $100 in Seattle in medium, the homeless population raises 15%. And it's like, essentially there's, we every year Seattle gains the population of one of our neighboring cities, Issaquah, every year in new homeless people. And a lot of this is because housing is being uprooted. And I mean, not saying like, not trying to equate homeless people and rats, but I mean, when you disturb people's homes, this sort of stuff happens. Like,
yeah,
it's just weird that like when we didn't have like a high level of really high income earning people living in the city, it was much nicer all around. Like everyone enjoyed it more. And now it's like very rich and very poor are the only people who can be here. And it's just become a much more unpleasant city to be in. It's really weird.
Seth.
I think what I'm saying is rich people are the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, the thing, well, I don't want to get too deep into this again, cause we tend to, but one of the things, I keep thinking of is what happens when the rich people get bored and decide they don't want to live in the city anymore.
Yeah. We all get Detroits. Everyone. Sorry, Detroit.
Well, I kind of feel like as Detroit goes, so goes the whole country. So,
yeah. They were the canary in the coal mine, and we never saw it.
I like that. I never heard that.
I just made it up. Well, I didn't make up the canary in coal mine, but...
Well, I mean, well, that I've heard, but not in reference to Detroit. That's neat. I'm going to steal that.
Do it.
I guess the only other answer is that we all have to become rich.
Yeah, that won't happen.
Yeah, yeah. No, probably not.
No, it's definite. I can guarantee. But, unless you got more from the party, we can move on.
No, it was fun, I think. I don't, it's foggy.
So someone had a good time.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. So, like I said, the number one for this week was Turncoat on Boom, and I believe this was Brian's pick, so as per normal.
You were right there when I picked it.
I know. I just like to make people think that, you know, there's more going on than there is. So, without any further ado, here's Brian.
Wow. All right, what I didn't know until last night, Turncoat is a sequel to a book from Boom and this writer that I had my eye on, and it was another one of those. It was like on issue 3, wait for the trade. The book's called Arcadia. The trade comes out, I want to say May 10th of this year, so next month. I had no reference going into this. I just thought the cover looked really amazing. I like the kind of almost weird, almost Bob Crumb doing Blade Runner type of artwork that I was looking at a glance. The book opens up. There is this conglomerate called Management that is in control of, I don't know, the city or the earth. It looks like New York City in this. I'm pretty sure it's New York City.
Yes, it is.
I don't know if Management controls the planet or just New York City. There is a resistance group, and this girl, Marta Gonzalez, she is part of the Management police force, but she teams up with this guy who's like the most wanted criminal of the resistance movement. She secretly teams up with him to eventually see Management leave Earth. And because of Management leaving Earth, there's like this rift where there was half the population loved Management, half the population wanted them to go away. So like now there's this big rift where people don't know what to do anymore. They're the people that want Management to come back. They're the people that wanted Management gone that are now kind of confused as like what's next. In the aftermath, she becomes like a private eye because she can no longer be part of any police force because she's seen as the main reason why Management left. So a lot of people hate her. She goes to her office. This is 5 years after the prologue, I should say. And a woman comes to her asking her to find her son. So she starts digging around trying to find this woman's son. And it opens up into this whole mystery about a supposed group of hybrids that exist or once existed are now thought to be gone, and maybe they're not gone because I don't want to go too deep into it because it'll spoil some of the story, which I kind of feel like I've already started to do. But we mentioned, remember the book Undertow a few weeks back, I think? The one on Image about the Atlanteans. Same exact artist on this book. His last name is Artyom Tragunov. Tragunov? I remember loving the artwork in Undertow and not really liking the story so much. Or I liked the concept, but I didn't like the writing very much. This book is the complete and total opposite for me. Even though this is kind of a missing persons detective story with a little bit of, you know, murder and mayhem thrown in, kind of a sci-fi noir, so to speak. I personally have read this twice, and I loved it more each time I read it, and I loved it the first time I read it. Of all my picks of recent weeks, or recent picks rather, this is probably the one I like the most. So I don't want to spoil any more of the actual story, so I'll kind of let everyone else get their thoughts in before we go any further. So whoever wants to jump in, feel free.
I'll go. I also really liked it quite a bit. Yeah, I thought it was awesome. I love the art. I thought some of the placements of like weird circles and some of the panel choices were kind of strange, but yeah. I really enjoyed them because I hadn't seen anything like that before. And I also want to mention that the bar they go into in the comic is a real place.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, not important, but it's a real bar in New York City.
Interesting. So I wonder if you're from New York, you probably notice more things that they've, you know, tapped into, I guess, per se, as far as that goes. That'd be kind of neat. Kind of like the one, well, I just read that Atma Defenders that takes place in Chicago, so that was, you know, interesting to me. But yeah, I agree with, I mean, let's face it, a lot of stuff that Boom does is kind of, well, let's say not my cup of tea. So I was, you know, not say I shy away from them per se, but you know, I wasn't super pumped, but this book is actually, I was super impressed with it. You know, like you guys were talking about the artwork, it's kind of like almost seems like it's overly detailed, but it just works in such a weird. I know you mentioned like Robert Crumb, weird 70s. The artwork is just fantastic. You'll have to really kind of maybe Google it or pick it up to know what I'm talking about. But I agree. You know, those circles and stuff to kind of pinpoint certain things. And it's not like it was anything major all the time. You know, there was, you know, a click of the pen. And it's like, circle. You know, it's like, okay. But the story was way more intriguing than I expected. It took a few pages to get into. Only because, you know, the first two pages are, you know, it's about to go down more or less. And then all of a sudden, you know, the people who you thought were basically going to be fighting each other were now like, yeah, they're friends and they're. But then, you know, you get the whole story. And I was really impressed with this book.
Yeah, colors are great. Whoever's doing the coloring is awesome. It's well done. Yeah, very happy.
Christopher?
Yeah, it's dope.
That about sums it up. I mean, without giving too much away, I mean, what haven't we really said already, you know?
Well, I mean, I love the fact that it was kind of a, I don't know, I guess maybe this is the wrong term, allegory for current day income inequality and class warfare a little bit, or at least that was kind of hinted at around the edges, and kind of touched on, you know, religious divisions with the whole, like, that creature in the park who was like she was part of the sisterhood of the, I don't know how you pronounce it, carapace, is that correct? I have a feeling that's wrong. Something to do with insects, I'm pretty sure. Now I'm gonna look it up and feel dumb, but just stuff like that, like calling to mind how, like, when things are really troubled and uncertain, all kinds of fringe types, they seem to move to the center stage. Like kind of how in Dark Knight Returns, when Bruce Wayne's walking down the street in the beginning and that guy's walking around with the sandwich board that says the end is nigh. That's also in Watchmen as well. Like, when times are uncertain and jobs are not easy to come by and money is, you know, fluctuating and so on, the economy's not great, crime is up, etc., that's when you get more prolific people who start spreading messages of fear and uncertainty around, and that seemed to be kind of where this book lies in terms of the turmoil that this world is existing in. It almost kind of makes you wish that sometimes a comic could be like less bleak and not for kids. Like, oh man, this is a guy's going to mow his lawn and everything's working out. I guess that would kind of defeat the purpose, though.
Right on.
No one else got any of that?
No, I thought that was awesome.
Oh, I'm like sitting there, I'm like, did I read way too much into this? Like, what am I doing?
I didn't want to stop you.
Oh, I don't know. It goes blank, and I'm like, damn it, I'm the only one. Son of a bitch.
No, I'm actually really stoked. There's only four issues too. I'm hoping that means it's going to be, the story's going to like wrap up.
Boom
quickly.
Usually does that.
And it was, you know, I know it's one of four parts, so it's not really a number one in the idea that it's like an ongoing series. But you know, there was a lot in that. I mean,
yeah,
it's certainly like the first part, more so than like just the number one. I mean, it's kind of nice to get those sometimes because, you know, we talk a lot of times how number ones can be real thin, and this one, I mean, knowing that it was a sequel changes things a little bit, because the one thing I really liked doesn't change anything really, just my perspective, because knowing that it was a sequel changed the idea that at first I thought that it was like one of these stories where you come into a story that's already been going on for a long time, and I just like that it felt like a real world had existed, and they weren't spending a ton of time on exposition,
right?
Which is cool, and maybe a lot of that's taken care of in the previous story, but still, I still felt that same way. Like I guess that hasn't changed really. It really feels like a fully fleshed out world, and it's grimy and it's messed up, and the people in it are flawed and all have. You know, there's not really a good guy per se. I like it. I'm very much looking forward to seeing how this ends.
Oh, absolutely. And I just want to say, and I will not say what it is, but the very end was actually a bit shocking and kind of like a little bit of a jab, because it actually did elicit a little bit of an emotional response from me. Not that I like sat there and bawled my eyes out or anything like that, but I was just like, I kind of felt like that. Man, we are horrible as a species, even though these people are kind of almost like mutants. And I don't mean that like they're mutants in the comics, but like after this management crisis and this whole alien thing, all the characters, the way they're drawn, they look almost Frankenstein-esque at times, even the most normal of them. But just the end was like such a, like, well, you didn't have to do that. I don't know. I don't know. Usually, it kind of is the anti-Garth Ennis, whereas, like, in that Punisher run, for example, and I don't want to get too long-winded on that, but it seems like just the body count piles up and none of the death means anything. It's just Frank Castle standing atop a pile of corpses again, and there's guts and blood, and he's covered in it, and he's just like, well, on to the next pile.
Okay. Well, let's number this before we ramble some more. So go ahead, Brian.
I'm going to give it a 9. I really, really like this. 4 issues, like Damian said, is like a perfect length to get it. And this guy's pretty detailed, even though he seems to... It's weird because it feels like he's trimmed the fat, and yet he's very detailed at the same time.
Yeah.
The artwork is fantastic. The cover is one of my favorites in a while. So, yeah, I'm a 9.
Christopher?
Well, since Brian picked it, I'm taking off a point. Since Brian really liked it, I'm taking off another point, so I'm giving it an 8.
Okay. Damien, how about you?
But it was a good first issue.
I agree.
I say strong 8.5. I'm really excited. I probably could be more, depending on how things go, and I don't see it getting any lower than that for me.
Yeah, I'm right there with Brian. I'm giving it a 9. I mean, it's just, on top of being a really intriguing story, it's just a really beefy issue. I mean, there's so much in there. Visually, you know, wordsy.
Dialogue is okay.
I haven't eaten.
Now's the time to say nailed it.
Yeah, right. Hashtag nailed it. No, yeah, I agree. It was just a fantastic book, and I recommend it to everybody. So, moving on to some more words stuff. Is that a misspelling, or is that supposed to be double A there?
No, it's double A.
So is that care? Care?
I think it's Kare.
Kare Andrews. New Image comic for Romneys of the world. Is this like a is this like a joke?
It is kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing, yes.
Well, you might. I mean, I read it. Oh, I perused it at work. There's not much to the article here, but would you like care to elaborate on this? You seem to know more about it than I do.
All right. Well, Kare Andrews, he's the guy. Do you remember that stupid movie we watched like a year ago, The ABCs of Horror?
Yes.
I don't remember which story he did, but he did one of those vignettes. Again, don't ask me to remember which one because they are all pretty bad. And they made a sequel, so America, woo. Anyway, he also did Iron Fist on Marvel, and I'm sure he's done other comics as well. Iron Fist I really liked. I don't know if I'm a Kare Andrews fan yet, necessarily, but when I was looking at this and said he's making comics for the rich, I'm like, okay, that's got to be a gag. And I started looking at the ads, and they're all like these, like they all look like perfume ads for a comic he's doing called Renato Jones, the 1%. Which is super on the nose, but I think in a good way. But this ad campaign is just so excellent. Like, there's one of a couple standing in front of it, looks like a fancy hotel, and there's like a perfume bottle, and he's reading the comic, and it just says luxury, you'll pay for it. And underneath that, there's one of a couple standing there.
Wealth guilt.
Yeah, wealth guilt. He'll be the judge of that. It's clearly mocking high society, which kind of gives you a pretty strong hint as to what he's going to end up doing with this book. I mean, the cover of the first issue says the super rich are super fucked. I don't know.
And when is this supposed to start?
Not soon enough.
I know. I wasn't really intrigued until now.
Well, here, actually,
I wasn't sure if it was a real thing or not. I thought it was a joke.
But he actually has a quote here. It says, "If there's one thing that the Mossack
next month."
Okay. It says here, "If there's one thing that the Mossack Fonseca document leak has shown us, it's that the super rich have a lot of money hidden away all over the world. I'd just like to help by offering this persecuted class a luxury product to spend it on." And
I love that.
In case you're not familiar, I believe that has to do with the whole Panama Papers scandal that's going on right now.
Restitution, it's not revenge.
Yeah, I'm assuming it's like kind of some sort of Robin Hood meets Dexter kind of thing, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's not like anything super deep or anything. I just
never know.
I saw these articles, or these ads, rather. Timing is pretty much pitch perfect, like, with the whole... I'm not super up to date on what's going on, but I don't know if you're familiar with the whole Panama Papers thing.
Yeah, I am. I've been following it.
Take it you're not following it?
No.
Oh.
I'm actually busy at work, so I don't have time to...
What is it, 11 million pages?
It's huge. I mean, already the Prime Minister of Iceland had to resign... but he's just like one of many people. And a lot of it points to Vladimir Putin, but apparently, like, majority of the wealthiest people in the whole world are using these shell corporations that this law firm in Panama will set up. And basically, like, you'll sell off your assets to a fake company for like a dollar, and that company's in someone else's name, and it's just essentially this imaginary company that just you use to hold all your money so you don't have to pay taxes or... you know, claim it on anything, and it's just a way to hoard wealth.
Basically. I feel like this is not a new thing. Isn't this kind of what they've been doing for the last 20 years?
But this is the first time that a bunch of documents have been leaked that actually point towards specific people, and a lot of them are really high up in governments. Like, this could be a very big thing.
Right.
I would like to think so, but, I mean, how much more times that these people have to get caught doing this shit... and nothing happens that, you know, I mean, I guess I just lost hope. I gave up on them ever being held accountable for their evils or wrongdoings. I don't think anything will happen, but it's just me.
You're probably right.
Probably not, but this is all we have. It's just mocking and threatening them in a comic book. So, I mean, I'll take it, I guess.
Oh, I'm fine with it. I mean, I think they should all be held accountable, but it'll never happen.
I mean, in the world of cost-benefit analysis, apparently, at some point, they're going to have to be like, you know, do we stop doing this shit as much as we've been doing, or do we just allow these people to eventually just kill and eat us? Which is, I mean, it's got to end eventually, and I hope it doesn't go to the point where, you know, violent revolution is the only answer.
I think it's already at that point, but I don't think it would ever happen because the super rich also own these super armies, you know. Some guy running down the street with his, you know, Glock isn't going to do anything against a tank.
Maybe this goes back into a little bit of our number one turncoat. I mean, maybe something will happen one day and those people from those armies will start realizing, like, oh, wait, we're being completely fucked by these people.
Yeah, you would hope that would happen.
Plus, you have to think, in the most extreme case, how much is your wealth really worth if there's no one to flaunt it in front of? I mean, because essentially, money is a man-made thing. It's not a naturally occurring, you know, phenomenon. If there's 20 people left on the planet, who cares if you have $1 billion? So do the other 19. I mean, it's, you know, way extreme, I know, but
right.
When they have it all and the rest of us have nothing, then they have nothing. Because if we don't...
Their wealth is only... It's only a thing because we have none of it. Because
we're not here to produce the goods for them to make that money. And if we're not working... Well, it's a long philosophical argument that, you know...
Right.
Whatever.
We could sit here and...
We spend hours.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, we could spend hours or we could just revel in these amazing perfume ads that are...
It's true.
Kind of hilarious.
Yeah, I'm almost getting a slight... Almost archery vibe, which is... Kind of neat because I still like that show.
Yeah, it's all right.
I watched it a while.
I'm like a season.
I watched it a while, but I like it.
Yeah. Okay, so moving on. Apparently, Wizard World is taking their con to the high seas. Is anyone familiar with this?
I did read the article.
I'm not going to lie. As much as I am at this point, I'm fairly anti Wizard World because I would totally go on this cruise. I don't have $800, but if I did, that's what I would do with it.
I kind of felt when I was reading this, I was like, man, the first article was, you know, comics for the super rich, and now I'm like, oh, here is the comic convention for the super rich. Awesome. Like, we're kind of on a theme now. I don't think super rich people would ever read comic books necessarily, but
they'd also never be caught dead on an $800 cruise.
No, you're right.
They'd be caught dead on their own $8 million yacht, maybe, but
named Bodie McBoatface.
Right. That is still the greatest thing ever.
If only some rich guy would let us name his boat.
Right.
Yeah, I think it sounds kind of awesome. Fuck rich people, but this sounds kind of fun.
Yeah, I mean, Wizard World is annoying, and I'm not a huge fan. But, I mean, it's still a cruise. So, I mean, you're still going to get all your meals. You got an open bar. You got... You know, the casinos, the entertainment on the boat, but then they're also going to have celebrities to hang out with. So
right, and they can't run away.
Right, so now I totally would have to creep on somebody.
Yeah, it's like if you catch, you know, Stephen Amell from Arrow, and it's down to you or a shark, I mean, what's he really going to do?
He's probably going to throw me overboard.
That's okay, never mind. He does have some moves.
There's always that third option.
Yeah, that's right. All right, never mind.
He's Canadian and apparently really nice.
They'll just, like, kindly ask you, do you mind jumping in the water with that shark? And you're like, all right, fine.
Since you asked so nicely.
I mean, you are Oliver Queen.
I don't know. I'd totally do it. I've heard cruises are fun. I'm never going to be able to afford one, go on one, but I've heard they're fun.
Oh, my friend's been on, like, 5 of them in the last 2 years.
Guy I work with goes on one every year.
I went on
Maybe if a crazy disease broke out, we could come up with a cool, like, comic book-related name for it, like the Legionnaire's disease. Like, those guys got a disease named after him.
Neat. That'd be cool.
Like Excelsior disease or something.
I wonder. See, well, this is actually kind of terrible because you figure we got the press passes for C2E2, but we got denied for Wizard World. But if we can get Wizard World cruise press passes, that would be where it's at.
That would actually be quite good. I'd be into that.
Yeah. Forget the convention. I want a press pass to the cruise. I'm applying.
They'll just drop us off and...
It'd be rude of them not to offer it, really.
I know. I mean...
They'll just drop us off on Jekyll Island, though.
Whatever. I don't have to come back.
I'm just filled with monsters now.
Whatever.
Once the rich got done with that place, they just dropped off a bunch of predator animals, cobras.
To take care of the rats, I would assume.
And the humans...
Circle it back.
And the humans, they drop off there and go, see you later. Have fun fighting the cobras.
All right. So I think what we're going to do now, I think we're going to skip what we got next. I mean, we're already pushing an hour. We still got stuff to do.
Yeah, we can do that.
So we're going to move right into our over-under, which, as I have stated, everyone's, you know, well, I shouldn't say everyone, but most people grew up with the Headbangers Ball. So we're going to pick our most overrated and underrated videos from that, from the 80s, late 80s. Overrated, in my opinion, and I'm sure no one's going to, you know, be shocked. I never understood why they had songs like this on there, but like Cinderella's Don't Know What You Got Till It's Gone, that doesn't belong on there, and they played it all the time. Why would you play all these stupid love ballads on Headbangers Ball?
Because they were technically glam metal, and
glam metal. You're not banging your head to you don't know what you got.
They tried to pull all the mainstream fans in early, and then they would give you a half hour of thrash metal at the end.
Weak.
Yeah, I mean, the label is going to pay for the videos back then, and the label's going to pay for the radio hit. So,
yeah, and they were not about to put Torunaga on the radio.
Why are you guys getting all technical with my shit here? I'm just saying, Cinderella videos were terrible and overrated, and should have never been on.
Yeah, they were bad.
They were bad, but I can think of worse.
Oh, I'm sure you could, but I didn't look at this until like a few hours ago, so I didn't have all, you don't do these on Tuesday anymore.
I tried. I just got sidetracked.
Right.
With Daredevil.
That's why we need to come up with a list. But anywho, let's go. Overrated Brian.
All right, I'm going to leave my alternate pick in case someone else picked it. I'm going to go with any Danzig video.
Oh, wow.
Reason being, because if you have the home videos where they play the uncensored versions of, like, Mother or Am I Demon, you get the full satanic experience, complete with, you know, dancing women and blood and chickens and all that stuff. But if you saw them on MTV, you got the super censored, oh my god, the PMRC is watching this, let's tone this down version where they cut, like, a third of the song out, and it's just a close-up of Glenn Danzig's face for 4 minutes, and it's like, yeah, it was all right, I guess. But again, once you see like the goat heads and the cross and the goat head on the cross and the blood and the chickens and the altar, it's like, what did I just... I don't need to watch this censored version. I want the full Praise Hell Satan version.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And being like a fan of Glenn from even before then, I don't know. I don't want neutered Glenn. I want, like, you know, turn the cross towards hell.
I fully support that.
Did we lose Chris or?
No, I'm here, dude. Okay. I had to go up and do something, so I put you on mute.
Oh, okay. Okay, overrated on you, son.
Go to Damien because I had mine and now I can't remember it.
Okay, Damien, sir.
Okay. Mine is going to be Anthrax, I'm the Man.
I do like that song, though.
I think my problem with it was I watched it again today. I think being older makes me kind of like it a little more. But back then, I remember like seeing the video. It's like it's like a lot of concert shots and everyone's like having a great time. And I remember like I hated a good time back then. my thing was like I listen to metal and punk rock and hardcore so I don't kill people. I'm not doing it to like hang out with my bros. And it was the most like it was one of the reasons I was not like I didn't hang out with like the Hesher guys in high school. It was like, no, I listen to this music because I hate people and I hate you guys and I don't want to have a good time with you guys and fuck fun. and that was, I think, the reason that I liked Anthrax at the time. But that was kind of the beginning for me of being like, no, you know, this isn't where I'm coming from. And, so that's why I chose that.
I'm into it. I like it.
I will admit, without that song, I may not have gotten into metal. It's possible I would have. But at the time I listened to rap, this was like sixth grade, and I heard I'm the Man. I was like, oh my god, this is cool. New rap song. And then I listened to the rest of the EP, and I was like, oh wait, I like this better. And then I bought Among the Living, and then forget it. Game over.
Yeah. I mean, it might have been a good segue the other way. I had discovered that after I had kind of heard other stuff. So I was just remember that when that EP came out, I remember thinking, like, what is this? Like, this isn't what I signed up for. Like, I want, like, dark, unpopular, sad horror music. I don't want, like, clearly these guys are smiling. That is absolutely against what I'm into.
They did, yeah, they definitely took a bit of a backseat for me as well once I discovered, like, Celtic Frost and Venom, but...
Oh, yeah, for sure.
They held me over for, like, at least the first year and a half, I'd say. And I still swear by State of Euphoria as being a pretty good record.
The one that has Indians on it.
State of Euphoria?
Among the Living.
Oh, Among the, okay.
Also a good record.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, Chris, did you think of yours yet?
You know, I can't really think of one because, A, I didn't have cable then. But really the only – and when I did watch it, like, at friends' houses or stuff, really the only thing I could think of that was overrated was the fucking host, Ricky Rackman, or whatever the fuck his name was.
Ricky Rackman.
That's not a video, though.
I know, but he's still a dong.
Should we say November Rain, where he's at the wedding and Slash dives through the cake, or whoever dives through the cake?
Oh, I don't remember that video too.
Guns N' Roses was big enough, though. I don't think that premiered on Headbangers Ball. I think I just premiered like regularly.
That premiered on Good Morning America.
Probably.
Matt Lauer came out with somebody and said, "Hey, look at this. Heavy metal is cool. Woo." I'll throw my alternate out there as a pick for Chris.
Go ahead.
I thought you were going to pick this.
What?
One by Metallica.
I was thinking about it, but as I thought about it, I was like, dude, I kind of like that song and that how they did that video.
I think for me
with the clips from Johnny Get Your Gun, and
it was just way overplayed, though.
It's not even that it was overplayed. It was, up to that point, Metallica had never made a music video. They were anti-music video. So when they finally announced they were making one, it was like, oh my God, I can't wait. And remember, we stayed up. I think we were at a friend's house, and we stayed up late, and we're like super excited because they kept teasing it, and then they finally played it, and I was like, that's it? It just didn't feel epic. I was expecting, like, you know, Welcome Home levels of epic, and it was like, just, it was okay.
That was a great video.
Sanitarium?
I don't know. My first exposure to Metallica was Master of Puppets, and at the time, that was like the craziest thing I'd ever heard. Then I heard Slayer, and I was like, oh, Metallica's kind of quaint now. They're not really the whatever.
It's true. Had they made videos before that, I would have. I would have been curious, because I mean, some of those earlier songs are fucking awesome. I mean, I think they would have gone like animated or something with some of their videos, like heavy metal, you know, the movie or something. I never thought about that. I didn't realize that was their first video.
Oh yeah, because I remember thinking every week when I would get to see Headbangers Ball, like, where's Metallica? Oh, they don't make videos. I'm like, oh, okay. Even Iron Maiden's got videos. But then
didn't they have two versions of one too, like a long one and a short one?
I think so. Yeah. They had one they could show on like daytime TV because they were starting to get mainstream popular with that album.
Yeah, like the power rotation version. It's like probably 3.5 minutes, and I think the regular song's like 7 or 8 minutes long.
Yeah, because they had to have the version they could put on in between like Boys to Men and you know, and The Informer or whatever that song was.
You know, you like that.
The Informer?
Snow Informer? Yeah, I know you're coming.
I had that in the car today. What?
You're a nerd.
I didn't, actually.
Liar.
It was like a week ago.
Okay, underrated. I'm actually going to cheat by a couple of months because I'm going into 1990. I'm going with Don't Call Me Dude by Scatterbrain. That video, to this day, makes me just laugh my face off.
Yeah, not a great song, but a pretty good video.
Yeah, the song on its own is kind of like meh, but then when you see the video that goes along with it, it's awesome. Everybody's
never heard of that song ever.
Dude, you need to Google Don't Call Me Dude.
It's super cheesy. You're going to listen to it and go, oh, God, this made it onto an album. But it's just corny. But the video was kind of hilarious.
Yeah.
At least 25 years ago. Like, today it might not be that awesome. You might watch it and be like, oh, this is like one of those like Funny or Die videos.
He's going to fucking watch it and be like, God, I'm so quitting this show.
Yeah, this is like one of those Funny or Die videos that they made, and they're like, let's not air this. All right.
I will look for that.
Yeah, it's not. It's good for what it is, I guess. But they used to play it all the time back in the early 90s. What was that?
I found it.
Oh, God.
I was going to just put it in the Facebook message so he can watch it.
Oh, okay. Mine, actually, there's two videos, but same band, same album even, and that's Judas Priest, either Don't Go or Hot Rockin'. And here is the genius of Rob Halford, because when Rob Halford came out as LGBT back in the late 90s, it was weird because it felt like people were shocked and at the same time, like, well, he sang for Judas Priest, so this guy gets a pass, which was kind of weird. But when you go back and watch those two videos specifically, and in Hot Rockin', he's in the shower with, like, the rest of the band. And in Don't Go, he's dressed up in full, like, fetish leather with the cap and the sunglasses, and he looks like... Did you ever see the movie After Hours with, what's his name? The guy from Johnny Dangerously.
Joe Piscopo?
No. He played the younger brother.
Oh.
Anyway, the movie After Hours with, it's a Martin Scorsese movie, and there's one part where the main character goes into a bar, and it's a gay bar, and he's a guy, all these guys dressed in biker gear, kind of like Rob Halford did in the 80s. Rob Halford's wearing, like, kind of like in the Police Academy movies.
What's that called? The Blue Oyster Club?
Yes. Rob Halford is dressed to a T in that garb. And every time a member of the band is leaving the room, he's doing the whole pleading, like, don't go. Please don't leave me. And it was like, he was so out there with his sexuality, and no one got it. Until he finally came out. They're like, you're serious? Rob Halford is gay? I had no idea. And it was like, you go back and watch all the old footage, but especially those two videos. And it was like, how did you not know? And I'm just as guilty. I was like, oh, Rob Halford's like the toughest guy ever. With, you know, he's in all leather. And then when he announced that he was homosexual, I was like, oh, my God, how did that get by me? I'm like, this guy is a genius. He's like the smartest man alive. And then you watch some of the old live footage, and he's like up on stage, like above the band. And you see all these women, like, taking their shirts off and flashing them. And all these guys, like, you know, shirtless and, like, fist pumping and be like, I wish I was Rob Halford. Just super, it's such a weird dynamic to think, like, that era of heavy metal was so super homophobic. And here is, like, the king of heavy metal. And he is of the LGBT community. Like,
you know, the song Victim of Change.
I do. Is that off of Stained Class?
I don't remember. I'm going to probably say the wrong thing I do. But it has that line that you've been fooling with some hot guy. I always thought that was a good hint.
so many references, subtle and not subtle, in those songs and videos, and nobody got it.
Yeah.
So
and people said they didn't realize Freddie Mercury was gay back when they, you know, back when that when Queen was going strong, and now you look back, you're like, really?
Yeah, there's a live video of them on Netflix that I watched, and I was just like, he is like super flamboyant, amazing performer, and super flamboyant, and again, no one got it.
Yep.
So, those are mine.
I've got two. Underrated, I definitely had. So,
but it was Sad Wings of Destiny. Just so you know, I had to look it up. Victim of Changes. 76.
Crazy. So he's like, yeah, he was throwing that stuff out there even before they got big.
My first choice is Candlemass Mirror Mirror.
I don't know if I've ever seen that on MTV my entire life.
1988. Late 80s.
That might have been.
I'm sure they might have played it.
Might have been a one and done. I saw.
Yeah, I don't know.
Doesn't matter. Because you know you'd like it.
I like Candlemass well enough. I mean, as much as one can like Candlemass.
I picked them because when I first saw them, my uncle had the fucking record for it. And I looked at it. It's my dad's brother, and I was looking at the record, the cover of it, and I was like, this is odd. And then I look at the back, and you see that dude in a fucking black robe with a fucking upside down cross. I'm like, what the fuck? And I seriously got scared of it. I must have been like 12, 13. But I always thought that that band was... I like how the fucking singer looks like fucking King Buzzo.
Bet he does.
I was, yeah. I was frightened of them. Because I thought, man, these guys are fucking no joke fucking Satanists. And then my true pick, a band from Germany known as Creator.
What song?
Fucking Betrayer, dude.
I used to love that album, Extreme Aggression. Oh my god, when I first heard
that album.
Oh, I still like it, but I think if I heard it now for the first time, I don't think I'd appreciate it as much, but yeah.
Yeah, they're rad.
Fucking awesome. Even Terrible Certainty is good.
The only
I know they put out records beyond that, but I mean, but yeah, those are my two picks.
All right.
Creator and Candlemass. Since what? I didn't have an underrated, I mean, overrated.
That works. That works. Damien, you got.
I always had a hard time picking something. So one of you guys already kind of mentioned it, but to me, like, maybe not so much underrated, but underappreciated, I think, for me at the time was the last, like, half hour to 45 minutes of Headbangers Ball. So that was always awesome. Like, you'd see, like, a DRI video and, like, Death Angel's Board or something like that, which I watched today thinking that'd be my pick, and it's actually not that good, so. At the time, I remember being like, who are these guys? They're so rad. But, like, that last half hour, everything was so awesome. Because you're right, you would get, like, Cinderella, like, I mean, maybe if you're going to get a good Cinderella, or not a good, but maybe you'd be lucky enough to get Gypsy Rose or some road or something like that. But, you know, mainly it was just this, all this, when I was watching, mainly it was, like, you know, Poison and Warrant and fucking Cinderella and, you know, Motley Crue, anything after the first album of Motley Crue. So all this stuff that I really wasn't that into. But then if I stayed up long enough and I could watch that last, like, half hour, I'd get all this awesome thrash, or even occasionally they'd throw something really, really strangely obscure on there, like, you know, some New York hardcore shit. You'd see, like, Warzone or, you know, Youth of Day or something like that, and you're like, what the hell is going on? The end of Headbangers Ball, this is so great.
Oh, yeah, I remember hearing about the Youth of Day video being on there or something.
Yeah, like, I mean, you know, he was in New York, and I'm sure people that worked at MTV, that worked on Headbangers Ball, that were programming it, they're probably like, yeah, last half hour, you guys can put it on wherever you want. So, I mean, these videos did exist. In fact, in Seattle, I think from the late 80s up until, like, early 90s, we had a show called Bomb Shelter Videos that was, I think it was an hour, like, every Saturday night on, like, one of our UHF channels. And when I discovered that, I was like, oh, this is what I watch now. And that was all that shit. It was like, yeah, that's where you get to see, like, Youth of the Day and The Accused and Sonic Youth and all this stuff that just, you know, that's actually what got me, yeah, entirely away from Headbangers Ball was that show. But yeah, that last little bit of Headbangers Ball, that last chunk was always awesome. And I noticed on YouTube that sometimes some people have archived, like, entire shows of Headbangers Ball, and now I want to go and, like, fast forward up to those points and see what was on there. Because I know there's some great shit, probably Melvin's video or something. I don't know.
Yeah, they did play the one with, I can't remember the name of the song, but the one with the sheep.
Yeah, it's, like, kind of a shorter song, I think.
Yeah, that's been on Headbangers Ball a few times. It's off of Houdini, I believe.
Yeah. There was some good stuff on there that the people that were willing to hang in there through the end.
Yeah.
Maybe you'd get Rollins Band or something like that. That wasn't, you know, a lot of stuff that wasn't really technically heavy.
I am a liar.
Well, let's not pretend like there was any old Rollins record after that first one. I guess Seek and Destroy had some good stuff on it. But no, that song killed Rollins Band for me.
Yeah, I wish I would have had more experience, but, like, we didn't have cable, so I never really got to watch Headbangers Ball. I mean, I watched it maybe two or three times, so it's kind of wasn't exactly easy for me to try and pick something here. But Brian had all the rich friends with cable. Scott sat at home watching VHS tapes of Ghostbusters.
I'm surprised Brian didn't pick something like Crocus.
If Joe was here, he probably would have.
I think I owned Change of Address for like a minute.
That's a terrible name.
If there's a heavy metal band from about 1983 to 1991, I think I owned at least an album of theirs at least one time in my life. Faster Pussycat included.
Manowar.
I definitely owned Kings of Metal. I definitely had that record because I remember being
what
so.
Was that other one at Uriah Heep?
Oh, wow.
Or what was the one with that stupid one that came with the Columbia House with the shark on the cover?
Oh, Tora Tora.
Yes!
I had that. Shark Attack. I had that record. I had a lot of amazingly bad records.
Yep.
You guys bought Molly Hatchet records because the Frank Frazetta covers?
You know what? I probably considered
it. The covers confused me.
Yeah, I did. I was like, oh, this is going to be awesome. I was like, oh, my God, this is what my dad listens to.
That's exactly how I came across Blue Oyster Cult, Some Enchanted Evening. I'm like, dude, it's like a Grim Reaper riding a horse holding a skull. This is going to rule. Actually, I mean, I do kind of like Blue Oyster Cult, but I mean, when you're like 12, it was like, oh.
It was not speed metal.
This is not what I expected.
I think, I mean, growing up when we did, like, I mean, when you guys were talking about, like, records actually scaring you, like, we grew up in that time where, like, people would talk about how, like, Judas Priest records are making kids kill themselves and stuff.
Yeah.
So there was that, there was actually, like, you felt like there was actual danger sometimes when you picked up something you'd never heard before. Like, you go to a friend's house and his older brother has, like, you know, just walls covered in Iron Maiden posters, and you're just like, I don't know if I should even go in this room. I mean, I don't want to go home and kill my parents, but if I go in there, that's probably what's going to happen.
Oh, that's...
Yeah, I feel like I never had that feeling.
I definitely did. Because not only...
Yeah, I was scared.
Not only the stuff on TV and like going around the neighborhoods, but once or twice in 7th or 8th grade, we actually got pulled out of class and lectured about the dangers of heavy metal. I remember we were told, like, we were allowed to ask questions, and I remember... Like, people are going around, is this record okay? Nope. Is this record okay? Maybe. Is this record okay? Anything I asked, they're like, no, absolutely not. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to hell. And by the end of 8th grade, I had already bought and loved Sabbath Dreamweaver. I'm like, yeah, I don't care anymore.
And you know, when they're going through those records, it was like, oh, what about these records that, like, horribly objectify women? Are these okay? Like, oh yeah, those are fantastic.
I'm like, yeah, that's okay. That's on the radio. That's fine.
Yeah.
Your stuff with the skulls and the Satan and the upside down cross is absolutely not. You're going to hell unless you get therapy. I'm like, all right, I guess I'm the guy here. Oh well.
What?
Huh?
Free wheel burning right now, dude.
Sweet.
I remember seeing that video when I was like maybe 9.
Who is that?
Judas Priest.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Duh. Okay, yeah.
Showing my true poser here.
Right. Well, I'm just going to still stand by my I didn't have cable, so I don't know what you're talking about. Moving on to...
Yeah, but you had... well, you remember Channel 66 played videos all the time. Back, that was like, what, mid-80s, right?
No idea.
Yeah, you do, you liar. That's where I saw Quiet Riot, Dio, Accept...
This is true.
Judas Priest.
Last in Line scared the crap out of me when I was in like fourth grade.
That's where I saw that video on that channel, and I was like, holy shit. It's like broad daylight, summertime, but I'm home by myself, and that video comes out, I'm like, fuck.
That and the cover of Diary of a Madman.
Yeah, that one too.
I was like, well,
because
I'm
he's got like that fucking weird jelly in his mouth.
That and there's an upside down cross in the back wall, which scared the crap out of me back then.
Yeah, my uncle had that record, and I was looking through his records. I probably was like 9 or 10, and I came across that one. I looked at the back, and I go, whoa, fuck, uncle, what the fuck is that?
That and the Black Sabbath Heaven and Hell album cover, because they had the angels smoking, and I was like, angels don't smoke! What is this? Oh my God!
That first Black Sabbath album cover is still probably the fucking most evil of covers I've ever seen.
Is that the one that's standing in front of the church?
It's some woman. You can't really make it out, but...
Yeah, it's just some really grainy photo of a woman standing in a graveyard.
She looks like a ghost.
That is a good one. I don't know why I thought it was them.
That cover's awesome.
You know, I don't know why any of us didn't say that. Or maybe it isn't overrated, but maybe we just need to make fun of it for a second. That Extreme More Than Words that was on a. Remember that song?
Jesus, yeah.
God, that was the worst song.
This girl I dated for a little bit, like 6 years ago, was a huge fan of theirs. And I was like, oh my God, I really like her. And I could see us getting married. But I think if I do, I'm going to have to listen to that band sometimes. And that's going to suck.
Maybe your wedding song?
What are you talking about?
Huh?
What girl?
Nah, nobody important.
Uh-huh. I must know her then.
You don't know her.
Okay, then.
You don't know anybody. You know what I know? Yeah. I do know is best thing ever. Nailed it. Segway.
Nice.
So a few months ago, for all of you longtime listeners who are aware that I took an online class at Harvard about how to search for life on other planets. I got an 88% because I'm super smart. And I've finally signed up for my second class, which starts in about a week, Introduction to Music Theory. So I'm pretty excited about that. And that's my best thing ever for this week. You're just jealous because you don't know anything about learnings.
That's enough of that.
It's what the ignorant do when they're afraid of knowledge.
Zing. I'll go with the episode of Joe Rogan's podcast with the guy's name. I can't remember off the top of my head. He's a former vegan turned hunter. And they talk a lot about the food ecosystem. And it was just a really interesting perspective on food production and...
Vegan turned hunter?
Yeah, the guy, he's from Vermont. He's got a kind of a odd name. Tomer Cirilli, something like that. Cervelli. He's a former vegan, like, you know, Earth First kind of guy. And then he... due to health reasons, stopped being vegan, stopped being vegetarian, and took up hunting and fishing, and then he's got this whole different perspective on... It was just a really interesting... And they talked about, like, the life cycles of wild animals and, you know, killing them versus them being eaten in the wild, and it's just really... I just like that sort of thing, because I remember from back in the straight edge days where it was like, vegan, yes, everything else, no. Or straight edge, yes, everything else, no. And I kind of like Damien said a while back, like, you know, the good thing about being older is having perspective to kind of look at a broader viewpoint on various things. And this was just one of those examples. I don't know, because food becomes kind of a more important thing as you get older for a number of reasons. A, health. B, you turn out looking like me.
Sexy.
I've known a couple guys like that. Did you guys ever see that Sub Pop record that's like Sub Pop Employee of the Month, Curtis Pitts, and it had just a guy's like smiling on it?
No.
All right, well, that dude worked for Sub Pop, and he was a super vegan guy in Seattle, straight edge guy. And then he kind of like decided to go off the grid and ended up living in a teepee in South Dakota. And he now, I saw him a couple years ago at a Sun show, and he told me that he's like, I don't have an address. I have a PO box in the nearest town, which is like 100 miles away. I have a plot of land that has like a river, and I hunt animals now. And I was like, oh, how is that? He goes, it's cool. I did have to shoot a bear because it was trying to get into my teepee to kill my pregnant wife. I was like, dude, you have changed your life. And yeah, he's one of those guys now. Like, was once vegan, now just like lives out in the woods and shoots animals with bows and arrows and stuff. It's crazy.
Damn.
Yeah, it's just interesting to get a different viewpoint on that sort of lifestyle and like what being vegan actually means in other ways that aren't necessarily the greatest. Because people automatically kind of feel like, I'm vegan, therefore I am not a part of the cruel food production cycle. Well, not entirely true. At least from this guy's viewpoint, which I can see where he's coming from, and it's kind of interesting because it's stuff I didn't know before. So
that's cool. I will probably check that out. Actually, that sounds interesting to me.
And it's definitely better than when they go off on UFC tangents because I cannot stand that stuff.
Yeah, I don't care about that stuff.
Christopher?
The best thing ever, I went to the Hawks game this Tuesday.
Oh, neat.
Who'd you go
That's
with?
That's your hockey team, right?
Yeah.
Nailed it.
Sports.
Yep, I went to the Hawks game.
We like sports. Sports are great.
We don't have a hockey team here.
I know, you guys should, though.
No,
I
you shouldn't.
They've been priced out of the city.
Yeah, that's a junior team.
Yeah, they don't let them fight. And you can go up and see the Canucks if we want, but that's in Vancouver, and that's 3 hours away, but really like 100 hours away because the border takes that long to get through. I made letterpress prints for Farrell Darumpel this week. That guy I've mentioned before has that book on First Second, The Wrenchies, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah, which were quite sexy looking.
Yeah. Oh, thanks. Yeah, you saw those. Yeah, those prints came out really nice. I'm pretty proud. I'm actually going to go drop those off to him tonight for ECC this weekend, or for people who are listening, last weekend. Hopefully you all bought one. And it looks like I'm going to be doing a humans print for Tom Neely and Keenan Keller as well.
Nice. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So that was super cool to make that connection. Cause
moving on up.
More work, yeah. I like it. Being a printer is pretty fun. It's stressful because you have to agonize over the most tiniest, most bullshit minutia ever. But when it comes out perfect, it's really satisfying. And making those for Farrell was really great.
Dude, why does your Comic-Con so much better than ours?
I didn't even look at what was going on because I knew I couldn't afford to go and just didn't have the time.
How did you get in touch with him?
Well, because I'm looking at Instagram and they're like, since I follow most of those companies, like they're all posting pictures. Like Dark Horse is posting pictures of their booth at Emerald City, and it's like, dude, why couldn't fucking Dark Horse be at fucking C2E2?
Because they're not 3 hours away.
Yeah, they can just drive up here.
I understand that, but whatever.
I mean, they have to make a big presence because all the local people they use too. I mean, their Dark Horse Presents used to be such an awesome anthology with just so many like smaller names. They'd have like Jim Woodring in there and Pete Bag and stuff. And I mean, Pete Bag lives five blocks from me. Jim Woodring lives just across the water. Like it's just so many of those people are here. But yeah, C2E2 is going to be pretty awesome this year. I wish I could go just to like meet people, plug the podcast and you know, show my prints, but it's such a huge thing. I mean, the city kind of shuts down for it. Like my work on Saturday will be slow because of Emerald City Comic Con.
How did you get in touch with that Farrell Darumpel?
I just reached out. Like, I think, I sent, he ended up, I don't know how he's, I think I sent something to him about reading the Wrenchies and how much I enjoyed it on Twitter. And he ended up following me back, and I'd post some like self-deprecating beta male tweets. And I think he found them funny. And then at one point I just kind of like sent him up, since he followed me, I sent him a private message like, hey, if you ever want prints or anything, man, let me know. And he was super into it. So yeah, just went from there.
Awesome. That's actually really good.
Yeah. So he's those came out great. I'm stoked to possibly work with Tom Neely. Stoked they're doing more human stuff. And they have another thing on Image, I guess, coming up. It's going to be pretty gruesome. So I don't know. It's but making those prints, that's my best thing ever this week.
All right, sounds good. So what's this news that we need to know?
The worst thing ever.
There you go.
Yeah, so a buddy of mine from back in the day that I had kept up with a little bit, I'm not going to lie and say we were like the best of friends, but, you know, follow each other on Instagram, send nice little messages occasionally. His name is Jody Taylor. He was a singer of Strain up in Vancouver, hardcore band, and he actually passed away at his job.
Wow.
Last week. Yeah, he was an arborist and, you know, took care of cutting down trees and taking, clearing parks and doing all that kind of stuff. And he was cutting down a tree and it fell on him, crushed him.
Jesus, that's terrible.
And yeah, he, a year ago, he like ran into a burning building, like not because, you know, an arborist was called to the scene, but because he was there, like ran into a burning building and saved a woman. I mean, the dude was like a hero, and he had a 10-year-old daughter who is now, you know, without her dad forever.
That's a shame. That's
terrible. It's real awful. He was, I mean, he was, I mean, Canadians by nature are just very, seem to be very sweet, but he was just the sweetest guy. He was so kind and so funny. And Strain and Undertow had a, we played a lot of shows together. In fact, my first show in Undertow ever was with Strain. I had actually quit the band. I'd quit Undertow, and but they had scheduled these shows in Vancouver and Victoria, or not Victoria. Sorry, we had like two shows in Vancouver, and there was this band Strain, and I'd like, oh yeah, cool. I've heard the dude from Spark Markers in that band, because the guitar player from Spark Markers was originally in that band, and I was just kind of excited to go and went up and played the shows, and Strain was so rad, and the shows were so great, and I looked at those guys and we were driving back from them, and it was just such an awesome weekend meeting Sean and. Sean and Jody and Kim and Jinx and Eric and these guys, and just I just looked at those dudes. I was like, guys, I gotta keep doing this with you guys, is that okay? And they're like, yes, it's okay, fuck, of course, be in the band. So I mean, I don't, you know, if it wasn't for Jody in a lot of ways, I mean, my life may have really could have taken a totally different path. It was just, I don't know, it was just he was, you know, there for some of the more informative years of my life. We did the West Coast tour with those guys, and when Undertow did one of our 700 reunion shows, you know, Strain did one too and came down and played with us, and it was just like a huge family reunion a few years back. And I don't know, it was just, it was really cool to know those guys, and especially to know Jody. So it was a bummer that he went, and he, you know, had to go the way he did, but he left behind a lot of people who really cared about him. And you know, that a lot of how cool and what such a good guy he was really reflected in the outreach and the support that has already come down from his family. I mean, we've raised a lot of money to help put his daughter through college and take care of that stuff. And one of his later bandmates was on the TV up in Vancouver and talking about how, you know, kind of reaching out to his daughter, being like, you know, if you ever need anything for the rest of your life, we're here for you. As long as we're able, we got your back. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, it's sad when anyone goes, but, you know, I think I mentioned this to Chris, but, you know, I'm proud of him, though, because, you know, he put out records, he affected people's lives, my own, in positive ways, and, you know, he left the world a better place than he found it, and that's really all you can ask for.
Yeah. Well, no, I said you should mention it, well, because I liked Strain a lot. So... I mean, I didn't know the dude, and they didn't, like, they weren't, like, they didn't change my life, but I thought their music kicked ass. So.
Yeah, they're awesome live.
And I remember when I got that 7-inch, and I was listening, I don't know who I was listening to it with, might have been Niraj. I actually think I was listening to it for the first time, it was with you, Brian, and Niraj.
You're talking 20 plus years ago, I honestly couldn't tell you.
So is that what? The 7-inch on Overkill?
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. I don't know. But all I remember is like someone going, kind of sounds like Undertow. I'm like...
I just remember really liking it. That's all I know.
Yeah. I'm like, I guess. I'm like, not really, but... Anywho. So... And the thing that got me was like how that band always played fucking Europe all the fucking time. I'm like, dude, every picture I see or every time I hear, they're always playing fucking Germany. They're always playing here. Why can't they fucking play over here? I actually tried to see if I could get them to play out here. Like, I talked to that dude, Eric. I forgot what he said, but they couldn't do it, so...
Yeah, that guy Eric, dude, that guy knew everyone. He was really good friends with Jeff Ament from Pearl Jam. They were like straight edge dudes.
He does,
together,
doesn't
like,
he do that website Flex Your Head or something?
Maybe. I don't know. I didn't actually keep up with Eric too much. He, I think, moved to Japan before even Strain was over with.
Oh, really?
Yeah, or maybe just he didn't play the reunion shows when they came down because he was in Japan. Something like that.
Hmm.
I'll tell you, Sean from Strain. Okay, first of all, everyone from Strain. Okay, they're Canadian, right? And people from Seattle and people from Vancouver, we have some sort of weird kind of rivalry.
It's a hop, skip, and a jump for you, right?
Yeah, but I think it's just, you know, we have a sort of like proximity rivalry. And so we kind of make fun of them. They make fun of us. They make fun of how we say decals. They're like, oh, you guys say decals. We say decals. I go, actually, we say stickers. but but yeah, they're great. And when we took Strain down the West Coast, when Undertow took them, it was like taking an entire band of Cousin Balkies down the West Coast. like once you get them out of like the Pacific Northwest, they were just, it was like they all went crazy. I remember we were staying with the Unbroken guys, and Strain's like just meeting them for the first time, and I'm like, you know, Broken guys, they're pretty, you know, I don't remember, but they're pretty cool, you know, they all dressed real handsome and super hip. And Sean comes out of the house, and he's wearing gray sweatpants with like a bright red T-shirt tucked into the sweatpants, and then he's got yellow sweatband with matching yellow sweatbands on his wrists, like one on his head and one on his wrists. And he's just like, let's go. And he wasn't kidding at all. Like, he wasn't, like, dressing like a goof, like, to be a goof. Like, he was dressing like a goof because he's Canadian. And he was just like, we're in California. Time to be like how they are.
And that's the dude that was in By a Thread, right?
Was it Sean in By a Thread? I'm not sure. I did not follow that band.
Is Sean the...
Sean Landy is the guitar player. That was consistent through the whole band.
Okay, because, all right, when I used to see pictures of Strain, there was one dude that played guitar. He looked like he was, like, Indian or...
Yeah, that's Sean.
Okay.
His dad was a mortician, and his dad was super creepy.
Really?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, like, to hear how that dude went out, so, I mean, yeah, I don't want to say it like that, how he died, that's...
Well, it's its own horrible detail, but I mean that's
god awful horrible.
Yeah,
that's just good.
And he didn't die instantly, so because I read the article and it said that he died on the way to the hospital, so which means he was in probably massive amounts of pain before he did.
Like to try to not think about that, I guess that's kind of
I know that's kind of the. I don't know.
Yeah, that's hard.
Just hard to it's also kind of like because, like, you know, like you hear John Bunch died like what 2 months ago. Now this happens. It's like, dude, it's like, what the heck, man?
Well,
we didn't know them. We didn't know them, but they were part of, you know, like, you know, something that we were a part of, you know, that we grew up with. So.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, hardcore is... I mean, for people who didn't grow up in hardcore, it's kind of hard to understand why we might give a shit about this kind of stuff. I mean, these weren't people who were in our, you know, World of Warcraft guild or something, which, I don't know, I mean, that's a maybe those people... Actually, those people might be super close to each other. But, I mean, we were part of something that was brand new, that the cops hated us for being part of, our parents didn't like it, other punks... beat us up sometimes, you know, it was something like brand new. It was just for us, and we were making it as we go, and it wasn't safe, and it wasn't on MTV, and it wasn't cool to anyone but us. And so, you know, I mean, there's a term, Steve O'Malley, guy from Sun, Burning Witch, and all those bands, he has a term called war bros. and there's like, there's your friends, and there's friends you can be super close to, but then there's your war bros, like guys where you've, like, you know, you've squared off, like you've fought with these guys before, like you've had to throw down before, and that's a whole other level. And I mean, these guys, a lot of these guys are my war bros because we were in fights together. We protected each other and threw punches, and it sounds stupid and it sounds overly masculine, but there's something about that, like. I didn't have a war, you know. I didn't have something like that. Our generation didn't get our war. We were between Vietnam and before the Gulf War. You know, we had this period of like rebelling against Reaganomics and, you know, fucking NAFTA and all this shit, and getting pissed off about, you know, income inequality and police state and all this kind of stuff, and, you know, Rodney King verdicts. Like, we got to fight and riot for other things. And Jody for me was one of these guys. I mean, he was Canadian and sweet, you know, had a sweet disposition, but he's also, you know, tough fella too. And I didn't actually fight ever, you know, alongside Jody in any sort of situation, but I mean, these are the people in hardcore. I mean, that was kind of what it was like early on. Like, you know, you couldn't go to a Hot Topic and pick up a fucking, you know, Crash shirt or something like that. That stuff didn't exist. Spencer's Gifts, of course, did exist.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, it's some people might not understand, like, why some of these deaths might affect us, because it's not like, oh, I used to be on a softball league with that guy or whatever, it sucks, he had a heart attack. I mean, this is now, like, shit, you know, we thought we could die at any minute, or, you know, we just got in a van and just started fucking driving, booking a tour only out of a magazine that had been published 2 years earlier, Book Your Own Fucking Life, hoping to God that the club was still there and we got there. You know, like, you know, we show up in a town and, you know, we get told that if we don't get out of that club in 15 minutes, the local gang is going to come kill us all. You know, like, yeah, which happened to us in Nampa, Idaho. I mean, this...
Idaho?
You know, this... And we did leave in. They did show up, apparently, to kill us.
With, really? With what, potato guns?
I was going to say, yeah. Like, Idaho, really, of all places?
Yeah. I know, that's what I thought, too. That's the guys were like, no, leave, dude, seriously.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's just, I don't know, I'm rambling on and using up our time, but I just, you know, that's why when someone like John Bunch passes away, someone like Jody passes away, you know, even when fucking Rabies died, you know, it's just, it's weird, because it's something that was brand new, and we found it, and for, you know, regardless of what hardcore is now, like, it's never going to be like the way it was. And so when we lose these big personalities, like, we lose, you know, a real chunk of this history, which will eventually probably be forgotten, but, you know, not well, so yeah. Long as we're all alive. So.
Right, yeah, yeah, but I mean, like, you know, like I said, I didn't know him, and, you know, it's, I really liked that band a lot, so when you told me, I was like, dude, I'm like, that... Almost felt, I was like, dude, I never got to see him, and now I'm really never going to get to see him.
No. I mean, my friend Dave Larson, he does a podcast here called I've Known You Too Long, and he interviewed me and John Pettibone and, you know, Jake from Minus the Bear, just all the people that we all grew up with out here. He interviews them all the time, and he posted something on Facebook how he has this big list, and as he interviews someone, he checks off that name on the list, and he's like, that list will never be fully checked off now. You know, it's
he's a dude. Realized. He's a dude that I did talk to a couple of times. So yeah, Dave Larson was actually is a real nice dude too.
Yeah, he's wonderful. Yeah, I recommend listening to that if you guys have a chance. But yeah, that's that.
Well, it's a very sad note to end the show on, but I think we're gonna have to call it a day here. As always, you can find me on Twitter at xorsonx. You can find Brian at Pure Rock Fury. You can find Chris at SkateXEdge. You can find Damien at Damien Johnson. You can find all of our shows at comicroast.com. And don't forget to check out reviewandroast.com for all of our review goodness and whatnot. I don't know what that was, but we will talk to you next week. With no-